You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Maybe just to start off, so we can hear more about like bumblebees, I was wondering what actually makes bumblebees different from any other bees? Because, you know, like to an outsider, bumblebees almost seem just like overweight bees without any honey.
All right, hold on now. Bumblebees are special for a lot of different reasons. I'll give you just a few. One of them is that they're social. So they have, you know, they live in a social colony where you have a queen and her daughters that are the workers. But they have an annual colony cycle where every spring you'll see these giant bumblebee queens flying around. And what they're doing is they're looking for a place to start a nest. And these queens have just overwintered. Queens at that stage, they are solitary. They have to do everything on their own. And once they start a colony and produce some eggs and they incubate them and then they develop and they emerge as adult workers in the colony. And it's only at that point that they are social, like have a social life. So the queens, the fact that they go through the solitary stage and then become social, that's something that's actually really special because honeybees don't do that. And most of the other social bees don't have that. So if you're someone like me, for example, who is interested in social evolution, you can study the sort of ontogeny of sociality in these bees. But then if you're interested in conservation, which is the work that we've recently published, is focused on this idea, then you really have to study not only when they're this big, you know, robust social colony, but also this sort of much more sensitive stage where you have a queen on her own, just trying to make it as a solitary insect so that she can get to the social colony stage. So that aspect of their biology is actually very unique, and that's one special thing. And then there are other things like they can forage. They have these really cool thermoregulatory abilities. They can warm themselves and retain the heat, and because of that, they can live in places that are a lot colder, and like the high Arctic. And so that's another thing that's really special. So way up in the high Arctic, they're the only bees that you find are bumblebees.
So they are a bit special.
They are. Those are two. I could give you.
We could go on for
infinite.
We've got a little section later on bumblebee facts, so you might be able to bust some of those out.
Okay.
So in your study, you've kind of found that pesticides and these really simple, I think you said monofloric diet, kind of have an overall negative effect on the bees.
Yeah, and these are two things that my work focuses on queens when they're trying to start a nest, but there's abundant evidence already from many other groups, many published studies showing that these two things on their own and in an interactive way are harmful for bumblebees. So people had already shown that certain types of insecticides, that bumblebees are sensitive to them in all kinds of different ways, and that that sensitivity has consequences for their populations. And then the monofloral diet idea, too, had also been shown in bumblebees, that they need diversity in their diet. Even if they're only eating they eat pollen and nectar, even if those are the two things they eat, within the pollen diet, they actually need to be getting things from different types of plants. So they need that diversity, just like we need to eat different types of, you know, vegetables and fruits and stuff. So, what was unique about our study is that we put those two things together, and we put them together in the context of queens when they're trying to start a nest, which we think is a really extremely sensitive time for bumblebees. So these stressors, when they're acting on a queen, when she's already presumably stressed, you know, she's trying to do a lot at that point. She's trying to start a nest. She's developing her ovaries. She's laying eggs. She's taking care of the nest. She's foraging. She's already doing a lot. And then if you put her under these additional stressors, it looks like can have devastating consequences for them.
And actually, just touching on that, when they're solitary and they're starting a nest by themselves, I was wondering, how do they start like lay eggs if they're just by themselves? They're just a solo. Are they like a hermaphrodite kind of thing going on, or something like that?
Well, so they have bees are haplodiploid. This might be getting too complicated, but they can actually lay an egg, an unfertilized egg, and they can produce a male. But so queens and workers can do that. But these queens, when they're starting a nest, they actually mated with males the previous late summer or fall.
Oh.
And they store the sperm. And they store it through the winter. And then when they emerge and they can develop their ovaries, and then they can actually fertilize their eggs at that stage.
So they're like pioneering on the IVF sector.
You could say that, potentially.
And then so just, I think it was this year, the EU has committed to a near complete ban on the neonicotinoids, which are like the real pesticides that are kind of affecting bees and bumblebees. Is this going to have like enough of an impact to really save bees and other kind of insects in the EU? Or is this something that the US could really help with?
Well, I know that there's really good evidence now from so many different studies that this class of insecticide is really harmful for bees. And so I think it's likely that not using them anymore over such a large area that would have positive effects on pollinator populations. But there are many other things that are affecting wild bees and other pollinators. So it is one thing that needs to happen, but there are other things too. So just from our study, you know, if having only one type of pollen in your diet is not good for a bumblebee, that means they need a lot of different types of flowering plants growing in an area that they can forage on. And so in addition to not using insecticides that are so harmful for them, it's also really important to plant forage crops for them and manage land in a way that gives them the food resources that they need. And so there is no one thing that's going to really save the bees. There are a whole set of things that we need to be doing a better job at.
And then now onto our favorite section here on the Green Desk, which is the fact time. So we have a national fact off, see who's got the better facts about. And I've just gone from the internet. I don't personally know too many bumblebee facts. First fact is probably the most widely known, is that apparently bumblebees shouldn't be able to fly aerodynamically. But recently there's been some studies showing that rather than flapping the wings up and down, they kind of go side to side, making these kind of like mini hurricanes that hold them up. Mm-hmm. That was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, that calculation was based on some old math. I mean, clearly they do, right?
So yeah, they do fly.
So the math was obviously wrong, and there was some calculation that didn't take into account, as you mentioned, the true movement of the wings. And so that was something that, but that still circulates. You still see it on the internet all the time, people saying bees shouldn't even be able to fly.
Yeah. Once it gets into the kind of wider knowledge, than everyone just takes as fact.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what is your favorite bee fact? Bumblebee fact, I should say.
Ooh, I think one of the neatest things about bumblebees is that in the very high Arctic, bumblebees are the only group of bees that you find. You know, there are 20,000 plus species of bee in the world, so a lot of different groups, many different types of bees, but it's the bumblebees that, as far as we know, are the only ones that have ever been able to colonize a place that is so cold and where there's such a short flowering season. So the fact that they're up there and that they're the only ones that are up there, I think is a pretty cool fact.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.